Every single home has sibling rivalry in it if you have more than one child. Studies show that it's in every home 10 minutes to every hour. Parents don't talk about it enough because of societal pressure to have your children behave well and to be like little obedient robots is strong.
How do we create these little microcosm learning environments for our kids to be able to work on conflict themselves?
Parents want their children to be resilient and have to grit, but they also don't want any struggle. There's so many good things that children learn while they argue. So the goal is to not eliminate it. The goal is to get it within a tolerable range. We often create things that we hate. If you said to your son, oh my goodness, you're such a bully, our brain is going to confirm it to us over and over again that that is true.
How can we focus on creating a bond with our children as siblings together?
Sit down with each child for 20 minutes, just one-on-one. That will help them in a miraculous way. We make sure that each child feels like an important child.
Welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I'm your co-host, Dr. Morgan McDermott, and this is the show for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Leah and I share the natural women's health and motherhood guidance that you're looking for through our fresh, functional, and balanced lens. Today, we're talking about something that plagues almost all parents at some point or another, sibling rivalry. Something that every multi-child house is going to deal with. And as we learned today from our expert, Ralphie Jacobs from Simply on Purpose, about 10 minutes of every hour is spent in some sort of a sibling rivalry dynamic. Arguments to physical fights and fairness. How can we as parents help our children come together and stay bonded and close without making it worse? He fills us with philosophy and practical tips to do just that, to create strong sibling bonds between our children and to know when to interfere, when not to, and how to do it. So let's start learning. Okay, so welcome to the podcast. Today, we are talking about sibling rivalry, which is something that I've been asked about multiple times and didn't really know exactly who to interview because I'm not a parenting expert. I mean, I do have my own kids, but I'm constantly researching and looking for new resources because it's just not like, you know, that's not my specialty. I am in the droves of it just like you and everyone else. And so then I have been following you, Ralphie, for a very long time. Your Instagram account, Simply on Purpose, which will be in the show notes, is extremely helpful. I love all your emails and your show note or your resources. Like, I'm not somebody who actually reads very many newsletters at all, and I do read yours because they're very helpful. And you have a lot of really actionable, easy, and unique to parenting tips. And I just like your philosophy a lot. So I'm so happy when you accepted this interview, because I feel like it's a big deal. I'm a little bit of a fangirl over here to be able to speak with you. So Ralphie, can you introduce yourself to our audience for those that don't know who you are?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, my name is Ralphie. I know sometimes that's hard to believe, but it is really my real name. And I live in Austin, Texas, and I have four daughters, and my husband and I raised them here and we love it here. I started out with having a degree in early childhood education. And then just as I started parenting my own children, I was always fascinated with development and how children learn. And I really wanted to be the very best parent that I could be for them. So I started reading so many parenting books and connecting lots of dots that I felt like, wow, those would be really helpful to everyone. And so I started Simply on Purpose, and it just grew really organically. And I just continue to learn and educate myself. And while I do that, I help other parents too along the way. And this has been kind of an amazing journey.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here. And let's just dive right into it. So you have four kids, and before we started recording, yours are between 11 and 22. So you definitely have a lot more of those sort of like older, mature kid dynamics under your belt too. And whereas mine are very minor still, I think some of the audience questions span both groups. So I'd love to be able to speak to both kind of like younger kids and older kids. I did poll the audience too of any questions that they had. So we can just kind of dive into some of that. But before we do, actually, do you have sort of a general philosophy about sibling rivalry that you can share with us? Or what is your generalized approach and thought to it? Because I know that there's different ones. There's some that say, you know, it's not your job. Like, as a parent, you just let them do whatever. And then there's some that say, no, you have to protect the peace in the home. You have to make sure that it's, you know, no one's getting like bullied or picked on too much, et cetera. And I can kind of see how somewhere in the middle is probably the best answer because, yeah, you can't let them be like totally picked on, especially if it's any kind of physical way. But there is, you know, it's life. Life is hard. Life is not equal. And how do we create these little microcosm learning environments for our kids to be able to work on conflict themselves, where it doesn't pit the kids against each other? Because I think every parent has the goal of their children being friends and having a lifelong bond and not, you know, growing up resenting each other because of something that the parents did in a weird or dysfunctional way when they were managing their rivalry dynamics. So I'd love to hear what you think.
You know, there's like so many unspoken truths about sibling rivalry. Parents don't talk about it enough because I think that societal pressure to have your children behave well and to be like a little obedient robots is strong. It's a real thing. And so we need to talk about it more. Like, what are the unspoken truths? First of all, that it's exhausting. We all hate it, right? And we hate being the warden all the time too, making sure that our kids are doing what they're supposed to be doing. So we're always on our lookout for what's going wrong. And that makes zero people happy. And the other thing is that it really is in every home. Like, every single home has sibling rivalry in it if you have more than one child. And studies show that it's in every home 10 minutes to every hour, that's a ton of kids fighting. There's a lot of junk being produced. So the goal is not to eliminate it, because it's actually a really important part of bonding with siblings, actually. It's a really important part of their development. There's studies that say that siblings fighting actually, and that rivalry, that conflict between siblings, it increases their intelligence. It helps them to be more resilient. It helps them to have a better communication skills, negotiation. There's so many good things that children learn while they argue. So the goal is to not eliminate it. The goal is to get it within a tolerable range, and to also not be the parent who makes it worse, who drives a wedge between your children and makes it harder for them to get along. So the reality is that I think that if we can change the way that we look at it, that we think it's violence, it's a bad thing, and think, is this inconsequential or is it consequential? If it's something that is doing damage and destroying and hurting our kids, and yes, of course, it's my responsibility as a parent to go in and to make sure that everyone is safe. But if it's inconsequential, which by far most of the things that our children do are inconsequential, about 95% of what our children do that we don't like is inconsequential. It's just limit pushing and a little bit of power struggling and emotion expelling, but it's not really something that is damaging in a lasting way. If we can label it as it's inconsequential and it's actually important. It's important that they have this kind of struggle. Parents want their children to be resilient and have grit, but they also don't want any struggle. You know, they don't want any fighting. They don't want any, you know, dissonance, anything that's hard in a child's life. And we can't have both of those things. We can't have a resilient child and child that has total ease. We have to have that dissonance. We have to have some conflict. And it's a really important and good part of bonding, of them learning social behaviors that are correct, of them learning how to compromise and to resolve the conflict with each other, and how to endure when things get hard, and then also how to forgive and move on, which is like so important for children to do, and they do it effortlessly. We insert adult meaning into conflict far too often. We say, hey, you know, you're doing that and that's immoral, but what they're doing often is something that's just functional. They just want to have the toy, and so they rip it out of the other kid's hands. That we just help them to create space to forgive and to move on and to not insert our adult meaning into that. So yeah, there are lots of ways that we can get it within that tolerable range, but kind of first of all, the most important step is to change your perspective on it and to remember that there are a lot of good things that they're learning while they're grappling and they're kind of jousting back and forth. And as long as it's healthy and it's not doing lasting damage, then it's okay for them to have conflict.
I think that the idea that we insert our adult meaning is probably one of the base level issues between parents and children in so many different ways. You know, like even the example that came to my mind was with anything that's kind of like inappropriate or sexual content. Like, it's so much of it goes over their head. They have no idea what they're saying, what they're talking about. And the way that when we get all like weird about it, it's because we have put this deeper context into it, because we know everything about life and, you know, whatever it is, in a different kind of way. And even with, yeah, the sibling dynamics and the sibling things, what I used to think when my son was three and my second child was born, because I have a son and then three daughters. When he would be mean to her, I was like, oh my God, he's a sadist. Like, he's gonna be the kid that blows up the high school. Like, he has no, like, you know, we would discipline him and he would laugh, or he would be totally like just unmoved, unaffected. And I started going to this like special therapist. I was like absolutely beside myself. I would extrapolate out 19 years into the future and be like, what does this mean? And it just was really hard for me to not go there because of all of the adult meaning. So being able to stay in the developmental zone and range of your child is very, very important. And we don't all need to be child development experts, but having at least a base level education of what is normal, what is not, I think would serve everyone, right? Like, it's okay. So for instance, one of the questions from the audience was like, how do you handle 4 and 6-year-olds biting and hitting each other? And it's like, to some extent, that's going to be sort of a normal thing, right? I mean, I would love to know how you actually do think that we should do that, but it would be different if it was a 14 and 16 year old hitting and biting each other. But, you know, like we have to stay within the developmental range. And like for my 3-year-old adjusting to this new idea of the sibling and stuff, when he would be physical with her, when he'd like kind of throw around or something, it's like just sort of testing boundaries, impulse control, lack of that. Now I have that perspective and he's 9 and a half now. And he's the sweetest, kindest. He would never even hurt a fly. Like, you know what I mean? But at that time I was scared. I was like legitimately worried about his like soul. So intense.
Yeah. It's so natural to do. So many parents do that. Something that is developmental, they label it as a characteristic. Oh, that kid is mean, or that child is picky, or they are such a diva, whatever it is. And then it's such an interesting concept to me, because we often create things that we hate. We often, because our brain is going to confirm it to us over and over again that that is true, because that's what we're looking for. We'll create something that we don't like. So if you said to your son, oh my goodness, you're such a bully. Why can't you leave her alone? Why are you being so mean all the time? And you kept prophesying that and projecting that and labeling that child. Our children are really obedient in the way that they will play out the labels that we give them. Whatever it is that we decided to place on them, they will play it out. What I think is so powerful and so magical that parents can do is that you can help your child see themselves in a new light. You can help them to expand their abilities in a way that no one else can, because you simply are the parent. So for me to come up to my child and say, you are trying so hard. You are such a loving sister. I love how you're playing so kindly with her. And oh, you made a mistake, but that's a part of growing up, and you're going to do better tomorrow. And just to keep on believing in her and helping to shine a light on the best self that is within her, that is going to help her to reach that best self so much more easily than if I just keep the downward pressure, keep giving that child downward pressure. It's a powerful tool that we can use. And if I can just remind myself, this is developmental, this is something that she's going to work out, that she's going to grow through. And if I can help her in a gentle way and guide her through that, that's a totally parent's complete purpose in life, is to be that guide that helps move their child through things in a gentle way and helps them to realize their best selves. They're going to do so much better.
It's so hard sometimes to do that in the moment. And I think about this often, because parents as coaches make so much more sense to me, like that idea. And I had my varsity volleyball coach in high school, whatever she did with us, she was actually a very quiet woman, but we did not want to disappoint her. And she was not aggressive. She never yelled at us. She didn't shame us. I don't know what in the world it was that she did to create this dynamic where we wanted to behave well around her and for her. And I think about it often, because even like the example that you just gave about like, oh, you're being kind to your sister, or versus calling them like a bully and stuff. If we were as adults speaking to somebody else's children, it would be easier for us to say those kind of kinder things and be like, oh, you're trying and whatever, because there's not this like angst. I don't know what this is. Hopefully I'm not the only one that feels this way, but you know, when it's your own kid, you're like, come on. Like, what is, like, you know, you sort of have these higher expectations, or you feel like they should know better. And what in the world? This is the 45th time today that we've talked about this. Like, can you please just level up? And so it's interesting how we have that dynamic with our own kids.
Yeah. And I think that, first of all, you're highly invested, right? They're your own child. You're very invested in their success. And I also think that we unfortunately place upon our child's shoulders the responsibility of being a reflection of our goodness. Mm. As me as a parent, as me as a person. So if my child is good, then I am good too. And that's just kind of, you're self-projecting, right? I think that if we can separate ourselves and say, me being a good parent has nothing to do with my child's behavior. It has everything to do with my behavior. It has everything to do with what I'm doing. It has nothing to do with what my kid is doing. Because I can't control my child's choices. I can only control me and the environment that's around my child. And then hopefully, if I do things well, and I'm a powerful model, and I look for what they're doing right, and I teach them deliberately, then that will help them to learn how to control themselves.
Yeah, I love that. I think that it always comes back to us. And it's just, you know, parenting is the biggest, deepest self-development journey that you can ever take.
100%.
And I love that.
Actively growing and developing children can benefit from added electrolyte powders too. Because true hydration doesn't come from water alone. And while we love to talk about the benefits of Redmond Relight powders for pregnancy, fertility, birth, postpartum healing, everything in between, let's not forget about the kids. The Relight Kids line of electrolyte powders was specifically designed with kids in mind. The mineral amounts are lessened to be specifically more appropriate for children or for adults who are looking for just a lower sodium option. They come in three fantastic flavors that my children love, including pineapple, pink lemonade, and grape. And they still benefit from all of Redmond's honorable manufacturing and quality control practices. The Relight line of kids' electrolyte powders contains 60 plus trace minerals on top of all of the proportions of added minerals like calcium, magnesium, chloride, and potassium. Childhood is full of metabolic demands, including sports and learning and growth and recovery. And so this is an excellent way that we can support our children. Go to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% off your order. That's your entire order. So including the OG sea salt or any other seasonings, bentonite clays, toothpaste, etc. So ahead, go to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 15% off.
Okay, so how can we focus on creating a bond with our children as siblings together? The things that we can do that will not make it worse, like you mentioned earlier, not push them apart, but bring them closer together.
Yeah, there's several things. There's several things that you can do to help keep that behavior, the fighting, the conflict within a tolerable range. Some things that we can do to help not create a wedge, but to create more of like a friendship factory, to help our children to see each other as a friend, as somebody that's an ally. One of those things is to avoid comparisons. We do that a lot. We compare our children, whether that be through competition, whatever that may be. We say things like, well, why are you always the one who makes the rest of us wait? Why are we always waiting for you? Your brother was in the car 10 minutes ago, or whatever that is. That slowly, if we keep doing that, we compare them, it builds resentment for each other. And then you're competing with each other. So whatever a parent is tempted to say to compare, for better or for worse, you know, we can compare in a good way or compare in a worse way. Whatever you want to say about that child can just be said directly to that child without any reference to a sibling. So instead of making comparison, you just describe what you see about that individual. So the key here is to describe. Instead of compare, just describe. So if I say, well, why can't you put your things away like your brother? I can just say to my child, I see a jacket on the ground. Please put your jacket up. And that just helps it to be about that child instead of comparing. Even if it's in a good way, like, oh, I have one child that's really great at playing the piano, and I also have another child that's really great at art. I can just say things about that one child. Oh, I love how you sit here and you get lost in your art. And oh, I love how you play that song so beautifully. That helps me to feel peace in our home. Whatever that may be, you can just describe it about that individual child and not say, well, why can't you sit longer and play better and your sibling practices more than you or whatever. And helping them to feel like whatever I'm doing within the home is enough. I don't need to have to fight for my place in the home because my parents just see me as an individual. And going along with that, like, there also is a big temptation to always make things fair and like equality, right? Especially if you have more than one kid, there's a lot of stress over everything being fair. And again, I'm going back to focus on that individual child and that individual child's needs. So if a child comes up to you and says, that's not fair, she has more grapes than I do, you know, whatever it may be, instead of stressing over what's fair, just say, are you still hungry? Would you like more grapes? Here, how many grapes would you like? Would you like a bunch or would you like a few? So by just valuing and being aware of individual needs, again, we make sure that each child in our family feels like an important child and that our home is has enough, whatever that is, enough time, enough food, enough play, enough attention, enough care, enough love, that we are sending messages over and over again. There's enough here. There's enough here. There's enough here. You don't have to fight for it. You don't have to fight for my time. You don't have to fight for the food. You don't have to fight for being able to play or for my attention, that there is enough here for you. And so just continually sending those messages of abundance rather than scarcity.
Okay. So I have a follow-up question to that. So something that happens in my home right now is that my 18-month-old doesn't eat normal meals as much as like the other three, the 4-, 6-, and 9-year-olds. So like, I still sit her in her high chair. We do it all together because she's the fourth. She has to go along with it. But sometimes she doesn't, you know, eat that much. She doesn't like it, whatever it is. So then an hour later when she's hungry, like we try to have these rules. Just these are the little nuances where it's like we're trying to get away from snacking a ton in between meals, because what was happening is our children just were not eating the meals. And it's infuriating as a parent to cook like healthy, organic, homemade food. And then they don't want to eat it. They eat the bar, you know, I'm sure you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But with the year and a half old, it's like, so they'll see her, I'll give her some kind of snack in between because I know that she didn't eat. And they're like, that's not fair. Like, why does she get to have a snack and I don't? And I don't know. What I've been saying is, well, because she's younger, she doesn't have the same kind of patterns as you guys do. And so I have to still make sure that she's, you know, getting fed. And you guys had a full meal and she didn't. And so here I am giving her the snack. I know that doesn't seem fair. I'm sorry, but it's just like the way it is right now because of her age. But how would you suggest that I handle that? Because I don't actually know if that's right.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, just keep it really simple. And this is your baby that is the one. Yeah. So to say her body's growing and her body, you know, has different patterns than yours. And I did this for you too when you were a baby. Isn't that fun that we figure out how to help our bodies and listen to our bodies and what they need? And we, you know, just make it about that and then just move on.
Okay.
Don't worry about labeling about what's fair and what's not fair, because that language will get into them and they'll start talking about that too. So just be like, anyway, you know, and just move on. And hopefully, you know, just what parents will do is they'll throw logs on a fire that they don't want to throw logs onto. And so just refuse to energize it. Just don't give it any energy and move along and just helpfully explain to them a little bit. Yes, I'm a loving parent. I love you. I love you. I love you. We love each other. There's enough to fulfill your needs. So I'm fulfilling your needs and your needs and your needs. So, and then just move on.
Yeah. Something you said there that actually I'm finding, I kind of stumbled upon it accidentally and it is helping so much. I'd love to know if you suggest this as a tool, is that when there's a situation like that, I do highlight, okay, so for instance, like when they're being physical with each other, I stop it. And then I'm like, hey, when you were the same age, I didn't allow this with you either. Or, you know, imagine if like this was happening to you. I'm trying to think of an example. Like my 4-year-old likes to pick up the 18-month-old and she's not very good at it because she's not strong enough. She's not big enough. And it hurts the 18-month-old. It hurts her like under the armpits. It hurts her neck. You know, she kind of like catches her. And I know she's trying to be sweet. She's the older one. She's trying to be a good sister. But I will say things to her like when Savi, my then like older child to her, was trying to pick you up at this age, I didn't let her because it was doing the same thing. It was hurting her. So whatever, my whole point in that like long, sorry about my lack of being able to be concise, is that I'm drawing that connection for them that like I'm protecting the other child just in the same way that I used to protect them when they were that age or when that same dynamic or same situation came up. And I feel like I can see the little wheels clicking behind their eyes that they do feel loved and protected in that moment. And they can see that it's fair. I don't know if this is like a tool. What would you say?
Yeah, it's a really simple way of just saying, mommy loves you and has always loved you just as much as I love your little baby sister too. And this is mommy's job. is to keep all of us safe and to help us to feel loved. And so I'm doing for her what I did for you too. So, you know, this is just my job and I love my job. Like over and over again, as much as you can say, like there is enough here. Also, you mentioned before we started this about how there is natural rivalry when a baby is introduced into the family, and then all of a sudden more and more focus gets placed on a baby. And that's really a natural thing for children to do, is to all of a sudden, oh my gosh, I've got to rival even more and fight even more for mom and dad's attention. There's so much research about the best way to help with that is to just give children more of your time. So more and more one-on-one time. My mother is a child psychologist. She has a PhD in child psychology, and she says all the time that older children trump younger children. So you can have the younger child play at a play date or hand it off to your spouse or your partner, and then go give the older children one-on-one time. And the reason why they kick up the rivalry is it's like as if your spouse or your partner came home with another spouse or partner. And, you know, they had their arm around them and they were hugging them. And you're like, what in the world is going on here? And they're like, well, you know, it's fine. I love you both. I love you just as much. You know, I love you the same. And they're in their eyes. They're like, there's no possible way. That's a new model. It's cuter. It's smaller. You're paying a lot of attention to it. How could you love us the same? There's no way. And so it really, really helps them to fill their cup, to spend more time with them. So they need you to tell them you're important to me. You don't need to fight for a place in our home. I will create that space for you. And what's important to you is important to me. So what would you like to do? And you let them choose the activity, whatever that is. I would say avoid technology, avoid like a video game or just sitting down to watch a movie. Do something that's more interactive so that they're seeing your eye contact, they're feeling your touch. Make sure that you're giving them that one-on-one time, and that will help them. It does it in a miraculous way. I remember maybe only like 5 years ago when my oldest was still at home, I was noticing a lot of contention. I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to their school and I'm going to surprise them each one at a time, and I'm going to go take them to lunch. And I will tell you what, I'm not kidding you, Morgan. It was like magic. Aww. I didn't even like it changed our home. Just for me to say, I see you. You don't have to fight for it. I see you, and I'll be like the bookends. I will hold that space for you in our home. It made all the difference just to spend a little bit of time with them. So yes, yeah. They will love on that baby and give that baby lots within an inch of her life, I'm sure. And it's easy for parents to do that too, right? Because babies are so cute and they have so many needs for us to spend most of our time with them. But older children trump. So make sure that we're spending time with the older children too.
Well, I've never heard that concept before. It feels so true though to hear it. And also makes me feel really guilty. Not that you're trying to make me feel that way. It's so easy to get caught up in baby land. Like you said, they have so many needs and they are so cute. And
I know.
And you also feel like, you know, they need to be with their mom, and as if it would like ruin their lives to spend an hour with some other care provider while you took an older child out on a little mommy kid date, you know, like it's not that way. And man, it just, that's so true. And I also really love that analogy. I heard that a couple of years ago about the idea that bringing home a new baby is as if your partner just came home with another spouse. And it was like, you have to love them, and I'm going to spend all of my time with them too now, and like blah, 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 blah. And it's just so, it like really hits me in the gut to understand what it must be like for them.
Yeah.
It's just so kind of sad. And one thing too that I'm noticing in my family is if I'm not careful about it, my kids in my brain feel like one organism, kind of. Like, especially the three older ones, because they kind of run around together as a pack, like I had mentioned earlier. And so it's like, I forget that idea about the one-on-one time, the one-on-one dates. Like, and it's funny too, because if for some reason, one or two of them has been taken away from the home for whatever reason, like they went to a special, like even a sporting event or something that we didn't go to as a family, and they're not there. Or if like my one kid is just by themselves and the other three are gone, it's like they don't even know how to be. They're like, you know, it's so strange for them. And it's almost kind of strange for me as a parent too, to just be with like the one, especially if it's one of the middle ones, because I'm like, this literally I can name four times in the last 3 years that it's just been you and I one on one. And it almost kind of feels like there's this awkwardness there, which they probably don't feel. They're probably elated to be, you know, one-on-one with a parent. But for me, I just have to be careful that I can see how when there's more and more kids in a family that there is this sort of lumping of them and not an individuality, which needs to be constantly sought after and preserved. It's just this like kind of thing in the background that's always in my mind, you know?
Right. It's hard to do too, because parents are so busy. There's so much to be done, so many demands on your time. So I would just suggest to try to do something that is doable, like do something that's doable. This is to serve you. It's not to make your life harder. So whether that be you just let one child stay up later than the rest of them once a week, you know, and you have 20 minutes extra with that child, or, on Saturdays, you say, okay, it's an hour of reading time and I'm going to take turns with each child and I'm just going to sit down with each child for 20 minutes and just one-on-one, we're going to read to each other for, you know, that time, whatever it, or you're like, hey, I got to go to the grocery store. I got to go fill up the car with gas, or I got to go, whatever it is, I got to run this over to a neighbor's house. You take that child with you and you label it as a mommy daughter date or a mommy son date, whatever, you know, the labels are huge. When you label something, it's like, oh my gosh, it's special now. This is really meaningful. Mom's doing this thing for me. Just slap on a label and go about your day.
Yeah, no, it's so true. They think anything, especially when they're really young, they think anything is a date. If it's like just one-on-one, it's special. And even just like something that I started to do a couple of years ago with one of my daughters was like, we would stop at Starbucks and get a cake pop because cake pops are so good. I think they do. Delicious. And so just to go through the Starbucks line, take 5 minutes and like $3 or whatever it is to get them a cake pop on the way to the other errands. Simple makes it so much, you know, more special. But okay, so I wanted to get into two more kind of rivalry dynamics that happened. So one of them physical and one of them more just in arguing. So let's start on the kind of lower tier. When siblings are arguing, and it's annoying to us, and it's not necessarily consequential, like you were saying. At what point do we, because it's maybe not, they're not being mean to each other, or maybe they are, or, you know, I don't know. It's like, do we have to stop it simply because it's like, you know, they're not speaking kindly to each other, like manners and blah, 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 like all these different things we think about, or at what point, how do you manage knowing when do you intervene?
Oh, you're in the field of like saying that depends all the time too. I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Always.
Nobody likes that answer because it's like, that's not an answer. But you know your children best. If you know, like, man, they're having an off day, I might need to go in there and just help reset so that things don't really escalate down. Or if you're like, if I go in there and I say something about it, it's just going to reinforce that behavior. And I don't want that to happen. So I'm just going to let them work it out. It's not a big deal. It's just not a big deal. They're fighting over whose turn it is to play Ken. And, you know, they really are mad at each other about it, but it's going to blow over and it's not going to be a big deal. And if I go in there and say something about it, it's going to add bigger meaning to it. And it's going to dig that hole even deeper. What you can do is you can go in there if you've decided. First of all, I would decide on the outset away from behavior and say, this is what's consequential in my home. This is what is inconsequential. I'm just not like, if they're saying, well, you're mean, well, you're dumb, well, you're, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's inconsequential. If you've decided it's inconsequential, I would just stay with it, stick with it. Because sometimes children will, not sometimes, all the time, they will continually escalate until you come in. And so they'll learn how to keep pushing and pushing and pushing until you come in. And they're like, mom's going to come in and hey, here's the star of the show. All right, let's get this going. They'll learn how to do that. So when you're deciding to put a behavior on extinction, that means you're denying them of reinforcement because that behavior has been conditioned. You're putting that behavior on extinction. You have to decide that it is being put on extinction and that you are not going to reinforce it. So even if it escalates, then you're going to say, well, I'm sorry, that's such a bummer that you chose to do that. And you're going to you know, maybe hug it out, or you're going to do it better next time, or whatever you want to say, but you've just decided, I'm not going to go in there. So decide on the outset. But if you have decided, you know what, I really can't help them, it's going to be helpful for them to have a reset. So go in there, and instead of labeling and choosing sides and saying, well, you give that back to her and you stay, or you go in the corner because you're the one that's being the meanest, just be a sportscaster and listen to what they have to say. Oh, how did you feel? Oh, then what did she do next? How did that make you feel? What do you think about what she did? And then say, you can say something like, this is a problem, and this is going to take some real thinking, but I know you guys are going to figure it out. I have faith in you. So what do you think you're going to do? You can say that, or you can just leave and have them try to figure it out, depending on their age. Or you can even offer some suggestions if they're really little and they need that kind of coaching and that teaching from you. But decide what you're going to do on the outset. And if you're going to go in there, then go in there neutral. That's really, really important. Go in there without the guns blazing, just go in neutral, go in calm, and ask them to help you to understand what's going on. And then without choosing sides, say, what do you guys think you should do? What do you think is the best idea? Or offer some suggestions and let them choose from those suggestions. So, but most of the time, I just let them work it out. And even if it continues to escalate, usually within about 20 minutes, everything is all over. If I stay out of it.
If you are looking for a delicious and effective supplement to help support the immune system of your entire family, from children through adults, including pregnancy and breastfeeding, look no further than the Needed Immune Support Powder. With elderberry, zinc, pre and postbiotics, arabinogalactans, and beta-glucans, this berry-flavored powder can be enjoyed on its own, or it can be mixed into smoothies, juice, sprinkled on yogurt, made into popsicles, or even gummies. It's something that I always keep on hand as part of our wellness routine, and it can support you through the entire year. Give it a try by going to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Again, go to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%.
Right. Okay. So then parents just basically have to kind of decide prior what their approach is going to be. And so, yeah, 20 minutes of hearing your kids argue and fight and scream and stuff like that sounds like a really long time, but you're right that it's letting them teach a lesson as long as no one's getting hurt, right?
There is actual research that says that it's far less than 20 minutes. It's usually about only a minute and a half.
Oh.
Yeah, but it's about a minute and a half. That if you can just let it be, then it takes about a minute and a half.
Wow. Okay, so what about if it turns physical? What do we do then?
Yeah, so that is very true. You know, sometimes when I say, hey, just let it go, parents will be like, Ralphie, I'm not talking about the bickering. I'm not talking about the wrestling. I'm talking about the screaming and the cursing and the throwing of things and hitting to hurt. Sometimes kids will throw punches, but it's more of like a reactive thing, not like I want to really hurt you. And parents will know what the intent is of a child. So yeah, that's all very, very true. You can't like leave those things alone, and you shouldn't leave them alone. But before I teach about that, about the dangerous fighting, I always try to remind parents that effective teaching is not working hard on the back end. It's working hard on the front end. Mm-hmm. So it's always asking the magic question, what can I do now to make my life easier later? So one of those huge things is to just look for the good in your children. And if you can get better at looking for what's good, they get better at doing good things. They get better at producing good for you because they feel loved, and they want your attention more than anything else in the world. And research says that if you just look for what's good, that about 80% of junk just disappears magically on its own. Because wow. When a child fills their life up with good, there's less room for junk. If a child produces more good behavior, you just don't have room for the junk anymore. That's just the reality. So 80% of junk, inconsequential behaviors just disappear. So again, effective parenting is working hard on the front end. It's working hard on the onset, on what happens before, not what happens after. It's like act one. If I can be intentional on act one, then things will be better in act two.
And it can be hard to kind of like wear that cycle and that loop. But I'm sure that once there can be like a Herculean effort given towards finding those good things and kind of giving less attention to the fights, just removing them, moving on from it, like not, like you said, that they want attention. This is one thing I learned from a therapist a long time ago, which blew my mind, was kids just want attention, even if it's negative attention, which
right.
even if it's you yelling and screaming at them because they're in trouble, it's still, they have you, they still have your attention. And so if we can just kind of like not, it's like dog training. I know that sounds really bad, but I, as of somebody who was like very interested in that kind of a thing as a younger kid, that is how my brain works. When I'm like, you just don't focus on what you don't like and you do focus on what you do like. And it actually goes a lot better. It's just hard to do that in reality.
It is. It completely is, but you're totally right. It is. Like I'm fascinated by dog training videos because I'm like, that's what I'm trying to teach parents to do all the time. And that is these, like what I teach is positive parenting. And that is the baseline foundational principle of positive parenting, is to stop focusing on weaknesses and look for what's good. And if we water the flowers instead of watering weeds, it works so much better. In the long term, long run, children, if you focus on strengths and build strengths and help them to be stronger, they'll have strength to work on their weaknesses. Children that are weak don't have enough strength to work on weaknesses. And so if we can just build them up and help them to feel stronger and help them to see themselves in new light, it produces more good. So yes, and being able to control our own behavior too, right? Avoid comparing them. Avoid living in a culture of fairness and scarcity and prophesying that light within them. So if you think about that, when you do what's within your power to change your home, then the chances are that you even have to worry about the damaging behavior is really quite low. It significantly decreases. But the reality is that kids have bad days, right? And they're learning just like us. So let's talk about what we can do to help when a kid has a bad day and they do something out of anger. And their intent is really to like get back at that kid and just like, I can't stand you anymore, which is fair, right? Actually, anyone who has more than one kid is doing a lot of good to society because children are learning how to negotiate. They're learning a lot of important social skills within the home. It's really a good thing for kids to have siblings. And it's totally okay if you choose to only have one kid too. But like that interaction between siblings is, it teaches so many, so many things. So if a behavior has moved from that inconsequential realm to consequential, you should engage. Absolutely. That's your responsibility, is to keep everyone in the home safe. And when you see danger, the strategy that I like best, that's so simple, easy for parents to understand, is just three words: stop, redirect, reinforce. So to stop a behavior, you need to get close to the child rather than like yelling across the room. Get close, right? Proximity is key. We all behave better when a police officer is right behind us on the highway. So get close to the child, touch them in a safe way, not in a way that they're scared, and you call them by name. And I would say, like my youngest daughter's name is Sybil. I would say, Sybil, that behavior is not okay in our home. You are really upset. I can see that you're upset. So just saying their emotion and calling out and acknowledging their feelings helps the brain to calm down. So for me to say, you are really upset, you look really frustrated, and to acknowledge that feeling and then redirect them. If they're old enough, ask them questions. Like, what can you do when you feel this way? So you're redirecting the behavior towards something that's good. You're filling up that behavior void with something that's good. A lot of parents just want behavior to stop. They want it to squash, like just get rid of it. But what we do when we just get behavior to stop is we just say, knock it off, leave it alone, don't touch that, whatever. We're creating a behavior void. And what fills into that void is often more misbehavior because you're not replacing it with a good positive behavior. So that's important. It's really important to redirect and show your child what they should be doing. So what should you do when you feel this way? Or how should you be treating your child? Or if they're younger, you can offer again a solution. You can offer what you see and help them to come up with something and let them choose something. Oh, you really wanted that toy and she took it away. Let's offer her this block and see if she'll trade us, you know, so you're offering a solution. And then the most powerful step is to reinforce. That's the last one. So stop, redirect, reinforce. A lot of parents will forget the last one. They'll be like, okay, fixed it. You know, it's all good. Done. But you're not done until you can come back after things have calmed down and moved on and reinforce the correct behavior. Mm-hmm. Say, I love that you're playing so kindly. Thank you so much. What a wonderful, dependable brother you are or sister you are, that you're reinforcing it and helping them again to see themselves in a new light and calling out that best self in them.
Oh, I love that. I think it makes so much sense because I think even myself as an adult, if I do something that upsets someone and, you know, it's like the compliment sandwich kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
If you just are left on this void of like, you're in trouble and you're just sort of like shame spiraling and then thinking about it, I mean, like, well, but if there can be on the back end more, you know, softness and also then positive things said about what was going well, or yeah, now what you're doing that is that they like, or et cetera, you know, that obviously is going to make me feel more motivated to do those things in the future. And also to not get stuck in that kind of like very negative place, which is something that now that I have like a 9-year-old and, you know, a little bit of pre-puberty kind of stuff is happening, which you've been through already with 4 girls, my goodness, or you're like going through it, you know? And it's kind of like you see these sort of bigger, deeper, more mature emotional layers adding on. And it's like, oh man, no, we don't want that. We don't want you to think that you are bad, you know? So there's just so much here. It's really complex. And parenting is just a wild thing. Trying to manage with the kid, the sibling dynamics is such a wild thing. And that's why people like you are so helpful, because you can't just hear, at least me, I cannot just hear this once. I cannot just hear this one time and then I'm going to enact it now for the rest of my life in every situation and have the tool under my belt and like know what to do with the nuance. No, I cannot. So I need to continually hear it. So like those that are listening to this podcast, cool, this is a good base layer. But now you need to go follow Ralphie and get on her newsletter because it is really good. And then continue to hear these same things again and again and in different situations. For me, like examples help so much because I'm a little too literal, I think, in my mind. And when it's just this vague idea, I'm like, I don't understand how to apply that. So I really love examples, which I think you give a lot of it. And that's a super helpful thing to me because otherwise it's this nebulous, like, you just shouldn't do that. And I'm like, okay, well, what about this? You know? So it's something that I just really love about you. And I know our time is up, so we need to get going here. But I really appreciate you taking the time to explain your philosophy to us. And as somebody who has 4 and they're on the older side too, you not only do you do this for your line of work with working with clients, but you have it in your home. And I think that there's so much value there to be able to like resonate and have solidarity with parents and moms too, because we all just want to do the best we can. And sometimes we're just kind of functioning out of the subconscious of how we were parented. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it's right. And it takes effort. It's this kind of continual thing to shift the dynamic in our house, but it really is beautiful. And it's such an opportunity. And I really want to encourage people that if there is something going poorly in your home right now that you're not really into, we do have the power. We are the leaders as the parents to enact as much change as we possibly can. Of course, our kids are individuals. They are their own people, and we are doing this dance with them. We cannot just shove them in under our control. So like, if you have a very rigid, ideal view of how you want this to go, that might not be good either. It's going to probably look differently than that, but we are still the ones that sort of set the tone. And one time in a postpartum workshop, this midwife told us that women are the nervous system of the household. And I love that for so many different reasons. And specifically when it comes to parenting, it's like, it's hard. It's really hard to stay calm all the time or to have that kind of air about you. But again, I think about my volleyball coach and she just always was so grounded and calm. And then it rubs off. And it's something that I'm working towards. I'm definitely not an inherently calm person. I would say I like very kind of excited and a little anxious, neurotic, like, bah, 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 bah. And I can kind of speak before I think. So I'm starting to try to learn how to have more of those pauses and say, does this matter? So I'm so happy you emphasize the inconsequential behavior so much, because I kind of think like, I got to get on top of every little thing. I got to be on their ass about this, about that. And it's just like, oh my, it's also so exhausting for me. It's like that,
right.
That is not our job. So anyway, I just really, really appreciate you. Thank you so much for coming on, and all your resources will be in the show notes so people can find you.
Yay. Thank you so much. And one little thing more I will say just about that, Morgan, is that if we care about everything, it's as if we care about nothing. And that's just kind of how it feels, you know? So like when we make our no's matter is when we say yes to as much as we can. Or when we make our redirection matter, or our firmness and our boundaries matter, is when we are kind and uplifting and as much as we can. And so to hopefully create, the goal is to just create as much as we can this like thriving environment where children feel seen and they can expect that when they come home, it's a place of belonging. It's a place where mom shines the light on what is best in me, and that also she's wise and she'll guide me and show me what I should do. And that just comes with like lots of experience with trusting and having those positive interactions. So yeah.
Love it. Thank you so much, Rafi.
Kids get sick. It's natural and normal. It stinks. But there are things that we can do to support their immune systems, their symptoms, and the progression of the illness. And so it's something I'm asked all of the time, and I created a course for you. So if you've ever been wondering what are my top remedies, the homeopathics, herbs, nutraceuticals, home remedies, supplements, anything and everything that I like to use for pediatric immune health from newborns on to big kids, I have made a course for you, and it is called the Natural Cold and Flu Care Course for Children. Not a very original name, but it's very useful, and you will use it again and again to revisit it each time that your child is sick. So you can find the information for that in the show notes.
In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.